Welcome to Comadres y Comics.
Comadres y Comics is a podcast hosted by three Latina women.
We focus on the Latinx presence in the comic industry,
with a special focus on strong female characters and creators. Hello and welcome to episode 21, guys. How's everybody doing?
Hello, I'm doing great.
Hey, I'm doing absolutely awesome.
You are here on Comadres y Comics, episode 21, and we are your hosts. I'm Sarah.
I'm Kristen.
And I'm Jen.
Hey, girls, so what is going on?
Well, I have some amazing chisme. I'm so excited. Those of you who've been listening to our podcast know that a while back, I can't remember what episode it was, but we reviewed The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina.
And oh, I know where this is going.
And it was announced a couple of days ago that they are going to go ahead and do a TV show. And it really falls on the back of the amazing success that Riverdale has had. And I remember when we reviewed Sabrina that we talked about Riverdale and how all the reports were coming out that it was going to be more of like a Twin Peaks-esque take on Archie. Yeah. And so this is going to be more of a, what can we even say? It's like, So Sabrina, as you know from listening to our review, in Chilling Adventures is more of a satanic witch.
to say the least.
And you know what? I actually also heard that werewolves were going to be coming to Riverdale. Did you guys hear that?
Oh my God.
I did not know that.
Yes.
What?
Yes. No. So I don't know if that is what they meant or if they meant quote unquote Riverdale because they were going to be part of Sabrina. Or because there is a comic book coming out where it is going to be, Jughead is going to be a zombie?
It's Jughead the Hunger.
Okay.
Yeah.
What?
So, I don't know, is that zombie or is that...
He's already a zombie in Afterlife with Archie, so I'm not exactly sure what's going on there, or if they're going to be doing, like, maybe a Seven Deadly Sins thing with each character.
Okay.
And, like, I don't know, Jughead's going to be, like, Glenn or something. I haven't really read the previews for that one.
Well,
I just know it's going to be sick.
All I know is that I'm super excited, and they have already announced the casting has begun. A casting call has already gone out for this show, so I don't know what that means for when we can actually expect it to be on our TVs, but it is coming, and I could not be more excited.
And it should be, like, right away, because if it's going to come off the steams of Riverdale, which is a really popular show right now, I think it should be, like, I'm pretty sure they're putting the pedal to the metal on this. So we don't expect it to be anything like Sabrina the Teenage Witch with...
Melissa Joan Hart?
Yeah.
No, not at all. It's definitely going to be more like... Jim Henson's Witches meets, I don't know, the Blair Witch Project.
I like it.
Yes, so definitely keep that in mind and keep an eye out for that.
Do you remember what episode it was that we actually reviewed Sabrina the Teenage Witch?
Well, it seemed like it was a really super early episode, so I think that Jen was saying that it was episode three.
It was only our third episode. Yeah.
All right, so check it out, guys, if you want to hear more about our review on Sabrina the Teenage Witch, which we're really looking forward to the show.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What is your chisme?
My achievement is that, and we also reviewed one of their books, Finding Molly, if you guys recall.
Yes.
Which was a few episodes ago. But the publisher of Finding Molly, Emmett Comics, which is an all-woman publishing group, has been picked up by Diamond. They are now...
What?
Yes. They are now...
Oh, my
Finding
God.
Molly.
So exciting.
It's funny, but... They're now available to order off of Diamond, but only Finding Molly.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, none of the single issues that I know that they've been doing have been, I guess, picked up yet. But also, I think Emmett themselves has changed their thing. They're going to be doing only straight-to-graphic novels.
That's right. You did mention that before.
Yeah, and so they're only going to be doing straight-to-graphic novels. So I think until like they can get like a full graphic novel set, is maybe they'll pick up more, because although Finding Molly is the only one that's available now, available for pre-order off of Diamond is Fresh Romance Volume 2.
Ooh.
And I love Fresh Romance Volume 1. It is my shit. It's so good.
But, so that's like an anthology?
Yes. Fresh Romance is an anthology series that focuses on LGBTQ romances.
Mm-hmm.
Not just LGBTQ, but also like people of color and just marginalized groups that haven't had like these epic romance stories that we all wish we could have read that featured somebody that looked like us.
Yeah.
And that's what that one is about.
Oh, that's cool. I've heard such good things about Fresh Romance, actually. I haven't gotten a chance to read it, but I've heard nothing but praise for it.
Yeah. I mean, Kate Leth is tied to it. Margaret Bennett's tied to it. You have a lot of big names who are writing short stories for it.
Yeah.
They just revealed that Kevin Wada has done a cover for
it. I really like his art.
I love
his cover art is really cool.
He's awesome. I love his fashion. He has a Twitter, and he does a lot of like fashion interpretations or redesigns of a lot of superheroes, and they're all amazing.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Well, I'm gonna follow him right now.
Nice.
Awesome. So what's your chisme, Sarah?
Well, guys, my chisme de la semana, this semana, is that, there's a lot going on. First of all, I'd like to let the listeners know that we have been really busy with a lot of comic book related activities and a lot of other activities pertaining to the holiday season. So watch out for that. And apologies if we don't record always on time. But we are trying our best to have a consistent schedule. Also, I'd like to say that on Mi Chisme de la Semana is that my brother and myself and this other fellow who we call ourselves Persuade the Nation, we are hosting a Day of the Dead / Halloween party / art show.
Cool.
So if you find yourself in the area, or maybe, I don't know, plan to come, that would be really cool. Don't forget to Uber, because we will have drinks. So we'll have art show for sale by people, you know, everyday people, people who have regular jobs that have a passion for art, people that, you know, that have something in them that they have to get out. And it's all types of media. There's perler bead media. There's watercolor. There's paints. You name it, there's going to be a show for it. Hopefully, right now, I think we have like about 7 artists that are going to participate, but you're more than welcome to come, and more will be sharing that on our Facebook page and, you know, all our social media platforms. And so I'm very excited about this show. And then also come in costume, because it's going to be like an adult's Halloween, and it's November 18th. The weekend after the Latino Comics Expo that we'll be at for the whole weekend, November 11th. So there's a lot going on, guys, and hopefully you can bear with us. We're going to be doing a lot of activities, so stay tuned. That's on my chisme.
That's an awesome chisme. Are you still looking for artists to participate?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
That's why we're really getting it.
Yes.
If you guys want to preview your art, show it off, contact Sarah.
Yeah, because, I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of people that are really creative and have a lot of talent, and there's not, you know, many galleries that host or cater to us, the normal folk that has a regular job, that has 3 kids, that has, you know, like, does all this other stuff in their normal life that can't just dedicate to art. And a lot of the artists out there that have been successful in their art, they usually say you have to dedicate everything to your art.
Your full 100%.
And you have to sacrifice, like, regular life.
Mm-hmm.
So for those people, for us normal folk that have something to put on paper or sculpt or whatever, we have this event that we try to do at least once a year. Sometimes we do twice a year, but as of right now, because there's so many things going on, we're only hosting it once a year this year, because it's already coming in. So if you guys are interested, definitely contact us on Facebook or any of our social media platforms. We'd love to hear from you.
Awesome. That sounds really exciting.
Yeah. It's
and
super cool.
Such a great, if you don't mind me asking, what really made this event, like, what got you guys started doing it?
It all started with, I forgot their names because it's been so long, but it's Francisco and Ivan. He used to work at a kind of a warehouse in Gardena, so the owner of the warehouse would let him use it for art shows. He invited us to do art shows there, but then he stopped working there, so they stopped doing the art shows. So then this other fellow who participated with us, he's like, let us do it. So it was an inspiration by them that we proceeded to do it. And then I'm like, we have no venue. Let's just do it at the house. And so it's a house, guys. But you get to invite people you know, and people who love art, and they might, you know, find and fall in love with a piece here, and they, you know, purchase it. Or, you know, this is one of the best stories that I have is there was this 18-year-old boy who put up his drawings and his paintings that were watercolor, and he put them up with blue tape on the wall at one of the shows. It was so funny. But they were the sensation of the entire show. He said he was on the fence at that point in his life where he was going to either give up art altogether. And he said that that show basically changed his mind, and he's now a successful tattoo artist.
Oh, wow.
So he went into a different media altogether, but he's still drawing.
Right.
Yeah. Tattoos are still artwork, man. I've seen some sick shit.
Exactly. So that's one of my favorite stories. So I'm gonna try to invite him and see if he's willing to come back and do like a cameo.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's one of my favorite stories. I don't know if there's any more out there, but that's one of the only ones that I know of.
Well, that's cool. Well, that's awesome. And kudos to you for giving back to the art community.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. It's hard work and it's stressful, but it's really a lot of fun when you're in the moment. So hopefully people can make it, you know, just some people just come for an hour and leave.
Yeah.
And that's fine. That's super cool. So, yeah, that's my chisme.
What is the malt liquor? What gets you drunk or quicker? What comes in bottles or in cans?
Beer.
Can't get enough of it.
Beer.
How we really love it.
Beer.
Makes me think I'm a man.
Beer.
I could kiss and hug it.
Beer.
But I'd rather chug it.
Beer.
Got my belly out to here.
Beer.
I could not refuse it.
Beer.
I could really use a beer.
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 Beer, beer,
beer, beer, beer. Oh, shit. Damn, it caught
that. All right, guys. What are we drinking today, Kristen?
So tonight we have a beer from a local brewery here in Los Angeles called Angel City. Angel City Brewery has brought us Sazberry. It's a single hop ale with blueberry, raspberry, and elderberry flavors. Now let me just say that as soon as I pop this cap on this bottle, the berry smells were so powerful.
Yep.
It made my mouth start to water.
Exactly.
I haven't tasted it yet, but the berry presence is definitely there. So the Sazberry is Angel City Brewery's newest creation. It says, what does Sazberry taste like? Well, it's a combination of the noble hop variety Saz and a mix of raspberries, blueberries, and elderberries in a well-crafted American ale. It says here that Saz hops lend a certain earthy hop spiciness and traditional continental European Pilsner-style aroma, while the berry mixture gives the fruity, tangy, and yet jam-like flavor and aroma of freshly picked berries, which I cannot even say how true that sentence is. Like, I just came from Portland, Oregon, where I picked fresh raspberries.
That's right.
Yes, and this smell here is reminiscent definitely of that berry patch that I was in this last weekend.
Oh, very cute.
So it's funny because the name is Sazberry, and immediately I think of Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, where Veruca Salt is like, Schnozberry? What's a Schnozberry? And they actually reference the movie on the bottle.
Do they really?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
It says that it's inspired by the lickable wallpaper from our favorite confectionery classic.
Wow.
Yep.
Not gonna lie, when you said Sazberry, I thought my mind jumped to Rick and Morty and Szechuan sauce, and I was just like,
that's funny. I saw that my McDonald's is bringing that back.
Yeah, for one day.
Oh, it's only one day.
Yeah, October 7th. FYI, that's my cheese man. Never mind. That's it. If y'all want that Szechuan sauce, only October 7th.
So. this bottle actually has some really cool art on the front, and it is it's called Mural by Kale. And Kale's an artist and designer from Los Angeles whose influences range from Leonardo and Michelangelo to modern-day graphic design and street art. He has studied under muralist Richard Wyatt, created scenic backdrops for major movie studios, and worked as the consulting producer on Oxygen Network's Street Art Throwdown.
Wow.
So the art is really super cool, and I really love that Angel City is giving space on their bottle to the artists.
Well, yeah. No. Aren't they located in the artist district in downtown
LA? Yes.
Oh,
yeah. That makes sense. And here is, it says follow Kale at instagram.com/kale.k. I think it says K2S.
Interesting.
So, yeah, that's cool. Yeah.
I like that font on the Sazberry.
Yes. So, okay. So, everyone, take your drink and let me know what you think.
Cheers, everyone.
Very tangy.
It's very tangy.
Very tangy, but I like the aftertaste.
Yeah.
You can taste the berries, not immediately when you drink it, but after.
So this is a 4.8 ABV, and it's very light. There's no hoppy aftertaste for this.
You claimed it had hops.
Well, yeah. all beer has hops.
But you could taste it, though.
Yeah, but no, there's definitely not an IPA aftertaste here. Mm-hmm. It's an American ale, so, and I mentioned somewhere I saw that there was, maybe I was reading the wrong thing, but it's definitely more of the lighter beers, not a Pilsner, not a pale ale. Definitely a hot afternoon drinking beer. Very berry and very light.
But
it
not
is,
sweet at all.
No, not sweet.
Oh, no, not sweet.
And there is a tanginess to it, for mm-hmm. sure. And I'm not a fan of sour, so I didn't know how I was going to enjoy this. But it's really, it's good.
Yeah, it's not sour, but I do like that little bit of tanginess that you can feel.
Yeah.
I think this would work well with incorporating this in some sort of beer cocktail.
Oh, yeah.
I think it would work really well.
Yeah, you're right. Like some sort of a Radler mixed like with a lemonade or a berryade or something like that.
Yeah,
or
and then throw in some berries in there. Mm-hmm. I think it would work very well. I think they could... this one is definitely one you can dress up,
yes.
I believe,
yeah.
in
yeah.
my opinion. And the color is just astounding.
Yes, it is a very pretty, like, red berry-ish hue to it. It looks like it is sweet, but it's not.
Yeah, it has kind of, like, garnet tones.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Definitely.
I like the color.
Yeah.
It's definitely a very nice jeweled color. I like it. Yeah. I like that.
Mm-hmm. All right, so...
it's completely different from any other color beer that I've seen.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
So, are you ready to give your rating on this Sazberry Angel City Brewery beer?
Yes. I'm going to go partial.
Mm-hmm.
Only because it didn't wow me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And in the fact that you could dress it up as a beer cocktail, I think... it could be more exciting if you do. I think this is definitely one of those. To me, this would be more like, you know how people crack open a Budweiser or a Michelob or a Coors?
Yeah.
This would be my Coors or my Michelob. This would be my go-to beer when I just, you know, had a...
just want to chill.
Yeah. That's so partial for me.
Okay,
Sarah,
so
this is Sarah.
Just a reminder, our beer review scale starts at flaccid, moves up to initial, then changes into partial, and grows into full, and followed by rigid, and then an oh my gosh, there is no beer better rating is Super Saiyan. So Sarah's giving hers a partial. What about you, Jen?
I'm going to go with Sarah. I'm going to give it a partial, mostly because I've had better, and it's just like this is definitely leagues better than a Corona or a Bud Light or a Budweiser or a Tecate or any of that, because it has flavor to it, and I do like that. But if it was a little bit stronger, I would give it more of a, maybe a full or something.
Yeah.
Like, if it was served to me as a beer cocktail, or mm-hmm. like with maybe some kind of soda and like berry puree or something.
Ooh, yeah.
That sounds, you see, doesn't that sound delicious?
It like, does, because it has a crisp, refreshing taste.
Yeah, and so. It's just like, I feel like, I know we said it wasn't sweet, but I definitely think this would benefit if it had a little bit of
a sweet
tone.
Yeah. Absolutely right about that.
And also, I have a fucking sweet tooth. Like,
so I didn't realize how well some beers are paired with sweetness. Mm-hmm. There are those Radler style concoctions that you can get at some breweries or at some cans that are already made with a mixture of lemonade and beer. And I recently discovered a place in California Adventure Disneyland that serves an IPA/lemonade, and it is so freaking good. Oh my gosh, it's so good. And it's just the IPA is, the last time I went they were out of IPA, so they gave me I think a wheat beer instead. It wasn't the same. It was so good. But the IPA, and I don't know what brewery the IPA is, but it's just perfect combination.
Those Disney secrets.
So good. And this Sazberry definitely, I think, would be a good mixture to do with something sweet, like you were saying, Jen. But I agree with the other two ladies for sure. I'm going with a partial. I'm not generally somebody who likes berry beers. And even though it's not sweet and that little bit of tartness in it, like, I think that I would definitely, like you were saying, Sarah, would be able to, like, drink this. It's your Coors, it's your Bud, whatever. I can see that, and if it was given to me and I was at a party and had no other choice, for sure I would drink it all down, but it would definitely not be my first choice. So I would say a partial. And listen, it's $2 at Costco.
That's true. that alone might even inch up the rating.
Yeah.
Level up, people. Level up. Yeah. Drop your Coors and your Tecate and just grab one of these.
Yes, yeah. And the bottle, the $2 bottle is a one pint, 6 ounces. So you're getting a lot of beer for your $2.
Yeah, like let's say you get two of these. Like, let's say you're inviting that special someone to come over. Get two of these, one for each of you, and you're good to go.
Yeah, or are those special someones.
Oh, Sancho status. All right, girls. What are we reading today?
Jen, let me let you introduce it, because this was a book that you suggested for us to read, and you had been trying to push it on us forever, and we finally gave it.
It was half of like, oh my God, what are we going to read next? And kind of like, well, this looks kind of interesting. Uh-huh. And Kevin had recommended one, and it's one that had been loosely on my radar. But this time, like, I finally was just like, okay, I'm going to read it. But this is Day Tripper by Fabio Moon and Gabriel Va, with an introduction by Craig Thompson, and what was it that I said? And coloring by Dave Stewart, lettering by Sean Cano.
Okay.
And this book actually won an Eisner Award for Best Limited Series back, what was this?
2011. Yes.
Yeah.
I didn't realize how long this book had been out until I was kind of doing some research online. And so, like I had mentioned earlier, I see this book in the shop all the time. And when we reorder it or someone asks about it, I see it. Had no, absolutely no interest in reading this book whatsoever.
Really?
Yes. And when she picked it, I was like, ugh, I guess. But gosh, it's so big. It's so thick. What? Oh my gosh.
That's what she said.
And I'm going to hate every minute of it. That's also what she said. But that definitely wasn't the case. So,
and who is the publisher?
The publisher is Vertigo Comics. So they're a subset of DC Comics.
Yes.
And so this Vertigo is one of those publishers that they don't put out much, but when they do, it's fucking amazing.
Yeah.
It's always absolutely astounding. And I'm going to read the description here of the book, but it starts off with, what are the most important days of your life? Meet Brás de Oliva Domingos, the miracle child of a world-famous Brazilian writer. Brás spends his days penning other people's obituaries and his nights dreaming of becoming a successful author himself, writing the end of other people's stories while his own has barely begun. But on the day that life begins, would he even notice? Does it start at 21 when he meets the girl of his dreams? Or at 11 when he has his first kiss? Is it later in his life when his first son is born? Or earlier when he might have found his voice as a writer? Each day in Brás' life is like a page from a book. Each one reveals the people and things who have made him who he is, his mother and father, his child and his best friend, his first love and the love of his life. And like all great stories, each day has a twist he'll never see coming.
I love it. And let me tell you when I started to love it. This is Sarah, and when I picked up the book, just the feel of it, the way the soft cover trade paperback moved in my hands, I don't know if I ever make a comic book, I want it to be this consistency.
It feels like a dream.
It does. The cover is soft, but so yeah. Flexible, and then when you open it, there's that smell, that Vertigo smell that I love so much. It must be the ink that they use, and I think they do it on purpose because it sends it. It already sets the tone. And the first thing that I read was, "Does art enhance our lives or distract from it?" And from then mm-hmm. on, I was hooked.
Yeah, the intro page. Just as soon as I read it, I was just like, "Holy shit!"
Yeah,
like, because it's not. Mm-hmm. Most books that have won an award or have kind of made a note itself upon comic book, like, history and stuff like that, like Swamp Thing or Preacher or Scalped or and any of those books, they have an introduction yeah. to them, usually by another well-known mm-hmm. Comic book creator or artist or writer. They're usually, like, about a page of just, like yeah. like a letter, like
right.
an opening letter.
Like a little essay.
It's, yeah, like a little essay, but this one... This one was done as a comic strip.
Yeah, right, yeah.
And that, as soon as I read that, I was just like, holy shit, this is going to be a trip. This is going to be a trip.
And I'm glad you touched up on that. I'm sorry to interrupt, but for me, I rarely read the intros.
Oh, okay.
I rarely do. I just go right into it. So when I read this, I thought that's what it's the whole comic's going to look like. And then I'm like, oh, wait, that's the intro. What?
Yeah. So. Yeah, I've never seen that done before. I thought that was mm-hmm. super creative. And, yeah, it definitely set the tone for the rest of the book.
Definitely, yeah. And it's, what was I going to say? Oh, just and like a small little tidbit of information. Fabio Moon and Gabriel Ba are twin brothers. Mm-hmm. They're Brazilian. They currently live in Sao Paulo in Brazil. But they have made quite an impact in the comic book
yeah.
industry, in the American comic book industry, and in the foreign market as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, I heard their stuff has been translated from Portuguese to French to Spanish to English to German. I mean,
yeah.
they've really got a huge worldwide following.
Mm-hmm. And I have to think that being twins really, really leads itself to, you know, how you see twins talking and a lot of them finishing each other's sentences.
Oh, yeah.
The feeling of the art finishing, quote-unquote, his brother's sentence, just
mm-hmm.
the words, the creative team that they make up amongst themselves, it really, really shows in this particular book, because
mm-hmm.
There's a lot of like fantastical elements to it, mm-hmm. and it's just super amazing. And I know that the relationship the artists and writers have, really, you have to have that kind of like
mm-hmm.
Unspoken communication, and as twins, I'm sure that just helps them in the creative process.
Not only, yeah, this book has incredible flow.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
it's just, with some comics, the problem is that you don't know like you sometimes you can tell when something has been cut off. Mm-hmm. Like especially this is kind of common in Marvel and DC comics, especially when they repeat themselves, like this is what happened before and yeah. this is what we can do. This one, it every issue can be a standalone issue.
Yes, absolutely.
But even when you put them together, they create this story that has an overarching message or like view into, in this case, mortality and stuff like that.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's utterly amazing, and they created something so unique and really beautiful. And this actually isn't our first time reading something by them. We did read something by them very shortly and very
that's right. Yeah.
In Hellboy in Mexico. Uh-huh. Damn, yeah. This episode is all about the throwbacks.
Let's but, call this episode the throwbacks.
The throwbacks, I'm down. But, and I remember reading that issue as mm-hmm. well. It's when Hellboy goes to, people are being raised from the dead uh-huh. In Mexico, and a young girl tells Hellboy, like, oh, he took my uncle, please get him back. And so he goes, and I remember that same that feeling of the fantastical, mm-hmm. magical realism
right,
with
yeah.
an insight into the human psyche is like really like they do it very well. And from something that from Hellboy to this, their own
yeah.
unique, they have a really good grasp of asking the big questions
mm-hmm.
and kind of not exactly giving us an answer, but a really good way of telling it.
I'm interested. I haven't read it, but they also work with Matt Fraction on Casanova, and I feel like what you just described actually fits to what I know of that comic, and I'm mm-hmm. interested to kind of read that. They've also worked on American Vampire and have also worked on How to Talk to Girls at Parties with Neil Gaiman.
Which I am dying to read.
Yeah.
I'm a big Neil Gaiman fan here.
Oh, shit, that might be our next book.
Let's do it. So I really love and appreciate that whole, like, a little narrative at the beginning and at the end of each chapter. So, like, mm-hmm. it creates kind of a whimsical feel to the story ahead.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it closes it just wonderfully as well. It leaves me kind of forlorn, like, this kind of longing at the end of each chapter with these
yes.
With these mm-hmm. kind of narrations at the end.
I have to say, I sorry to cut you off, but I totally agree. And mm-hmm. every single thing, this was originally in 10 issues. It was published back in 2010, February 2010 to November 2010. And I have to say, at the end of every issue, the way that it ends is just, it had me, like Jen was mentioning earlier, it had me looking at the whole question of mortality and what do you do with your life when you're faced with certain roads to take and questions to answer. And, mm-hmm. A lot of the stories are about the road less traveled. Mm-hmm. And also, a lot of the stories are about what happens when you don't take that road, when you go ahead and do what you think is expected of you.
Mm-hmm. I love this book. It's just really great. The art is amazing.
Yes, the
smell
art is amazing.
That comes out as you mm-hmm. turn the pages is amazing. I wonder if they made a specific choice to print it on this type of paper with this type of ink, because it's moving to me. To me, it's amazing. And mm-hmm. if you guys can see, I have a lot of bookmarks.
Yeah, you do.
There's a lot of wonderful things that I found in this book that, you know, like leaves you kind of questioning or thinking about your own life
mm-hmm. yeah.
and mortality as well.
I was telling Jen that somewhere in here, I don't know where it is. Maybe you guys will remember. There's a there's a Super Saiyan reference. Did you guys catch it?
Yes. I remember you mentioning it to me, and I hadn't been keeping an eye out. But when I saw it, I was just like, ah,
yes.
Because
I was the only person in this group that had no idea what Super Saiyan was before we started rating beer. And now I see that everywhere. I'm like, how many times have I missed that reference? But one of the things that, I mean, Comadres y Comics is a podcast that highlights the Latino presence mm-hmm. in comic comic book industry, regardless if it's creators or characters or just as a fan base. But the one thing that I really enjoyed about this book is how much that Brazilian culture is part of the story.
Absolutely.
Yeah. They often mention things in Portuguese. The language is a big part. Mm-hmm. Just the backdrops and the settings of the way they're one of the issues specifically is about Brás going to Carnaval and just the beautiful colors in the background and the people in costumes and just all of that stuff. The culture is very, very present in this book.
Yeah, I was like really excited when I actually read the word orixás, which is like those kind of what would I call it Caribbean gods.
Yes,
So I was like, what?
Yeah.
This is awesome. Like,
there's a rock in Espanol group called Orixás.
Really?
Back in the early 2000s, when I dated a guy who was a rock in Espanol music producer, we went to, I don't know if we went to one of their shows or he just gave me one of their CDs to listen to, but anyway, I became a fan, and so when I saw that, I was like, oh, I know what that is. Yeah.
That is so cool, and one of the other things that I really like was that when they were doing the offerings, much like Day of the Dead, but completely different, but the same. I don't know if you guys there is a point where the way they do their offerings is they put them on a floating vessel with the candle lit, and they let it go into the ocean, and then eventually it sinks. And I thought that was really beautiful. The only time I've ever seen that and was kind of introduced to that was when I saw Women on Top, I believe, with Penelope Cruz. It was she was supposedly from Brazil, and they had that in the movie, and I thought that was so that was so different but awesome, you know. And I haven't made a point to find any other reference, but when I read it in this book, I was like, oh shoot, I know that.
That's kind of cool. Well, definitely, even though Brazilians are not Hispanic, there's a lot of the Latinx culture that crosses over. I mean, how could
Absolutely.
It not?
Yeah.
And just the emphasis of family and togetherness. Mm-hmm. And in this book, how Brás actually goes and visits with his children on the weekends to his family, and they eat together. And food is a big thing.
Food. And he even goes into detail about the food they eat.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And I thought that was brilliant. It doesn't take away, it actually enhances the story.
Yeah.
And the feeling of family and togetherness. I thought it was awesome.
Mm-hmm. And there's a line in the books that I really, really liked that said, like, sometimes you don't remember the big moments in your life.
Mm-hmm.
The parts that stick with you, the parts that you can recall are the quote unquote boring parts.
Right.
And it's true. Like, a lot of my memories, a lot of my earlier memories of when I was a kid is not like, oh, like, I know at one point I think I went to, like, Disneyland or something, but I can't fucking remember.
Yeah.
I cannot remember. And that would have been, like, a big deal for a kid.
Right, yeah.
But I can't remember. But what I do remember, and, like, there are three memories in specific that I have that I know. One when I was 4, one when I was 5, and one when I was 6. And the earliest one when I was 4, my little brother was 3. And we were at the beach. And it's the... I remember this moment with perfect clarity. Like, I don't know why it's so clear to me that we were just at the beach.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't... I know it wasn't my first time at the beach because my parents have pictures of, like, those old, like, photos that you still had to, like, reveal and stuff like that. And then we're like, we were at the beach multiple times, but just that one moment. And my dad caught a fish and he, like, showed it to me and my brother, and I just remember, like, running off with it. And it's like it's nothing. Like, if you go down to Santa Monica or something like that, well, they won't catch, like, and so no, yeah, some people do catch a fish, but they're on the pier. It's just you could see, you can see hundreds of these visions of parents with their with their kids on the beach, just relaxing. And to me, like, that, and we've went to the beach more, but I remember that memories very strongly, very vividly. The one that I remember when I was 5 is of my mom cutting a mango.
Interesting.
Wow.
That's literally it. I can picture it again very clearly. And I believe it was 1999. Yeah, I remember the year. And I remember where we used to live, and I remember the sun coming down on my mom, and she's just at the counter cutting a mango, and I'm just watching her.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. And every time I think about that memory, I get, like, a bit emotional. I don't know why. I think you can kind of hear it in my voice, but I just really like that memory. And it's nothing. My mom has cut a mango hundreds of times.
Yeah.
I've cut a mango a lot of times. But that memory itself is just, I remember it with perfect clarity. I remember what I was wearing. I remember what my mom was wearing. I remember how she looks when I was just five. She was a lot younger. And it's something that I just remember with perfect clarity. And the one when I was six is, I remember buying fireworks. Again, not incredibly, like, unique. The 4th of July happens every year. And it wasn't my first time buying fireworks with my parents. But I just remember I was buying fireworks and I fell. And I basically cut my knee. And I still have the scar for it, but I just remember, I remember the pain, I remember my knee being cut, and I remember crying, and I remember my parents going, "Are you okay?" Mm. And that's about it. And I know I was present for when my little sister was born and when my little brother was born. I just don't remember those days.
Yeah.
And those are important days, like really big days that have affected me since now because my siblings were born.
Right.
But I do not remember them. And it's like, it's weird how it's the boring parts of life that you remember. And I really resonated with that with that phrase in the book.
I don't know where to go from there, but no. I mean, I totally get what you're saying, and that is definitely a feeling we have in this book. One of the things I liked about this book was when they were when they were 21, his best friend and himself, they went on a trip around their country, and they were in a totally different city. And the kids that make the little crafts and stuff and try to sell it to foreigners, and they kept calling him gringo. And I knew that this is Brazil, and I knew that they're probably speaking Portuguese, but the fact that he said gringo, it just felt so my life, our life, what people have, we're Mexican, so it just felt so real to me, so like something I can relate to, and because his best friend is he looks black, and he looks white, although he's from Brazil.
They're both Brazilian.
You are a gringo. You are a foreigner. Mm-hmm. And I think there was a thing that he said. I don't know if you guys recall that he said something about you're white.
So long as these people are concerned,
You
belong to a whole different world.
Right.
The white world.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Uh-huh. That's exactly what he says. I was trying to find it, but that's exactly what he says. And that I felt was completely true.
Yeah.
And something that I can completely relate in my life.
And oh yeah, definitely. When I've gone,
that's when I knew this book was different.
Yeah. When I've gone back to Guatemala the few times that I have, everyone there knows I'm not from there.
Yeah.
They just know. There's something about how I talk. There's something about of course of how I dress.
Right.
And the clothes that I carry. But they immediately know. And as being a foreigner, like in the country that you're supposed to be a part of, it's an odd feeling, and it's a strange, almost, it's definitely very unique experience. But I think at that point they were already in El Salvador.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's where he met the girl of his dreams.
She was really hot, by the way.
Yeah.
Oh,
Their first meet was really enchanting and mysterious.
Yeah.
I would totally have done what he did.
But you make a good point, Jen, where you're saying the feeling of being a foreigner in a place where you're supposed to belong is just one of just a fish out of water type thing. And for a lot of Latinos, that feeling happens both when they visit their home country and also here in the United
here
States.
In the U.S., definitely.
So that's definitely an experience that I think that Latinos and probably a lot of other cultures, but I can only speak for the Latinos, that the experience that I've seen and had that is something that it feels like they don't have a sense of belonging in either place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sort of like between. La India Maria that says ni de aquí ni de allá. And you know what? You're absolutely right. The day I remember was I went to go visit Mexico, and before my 13th birthday, anybody asked me, "What are you or where are you from?" And I would always say, "I'm Mexican. I'm Mexican," like with such pride. "I'm Mexican. I'm Mexican." And then I went to Mexico when I was 13, older, and I understand more about the world, not as much, but more than when I was 5. And it was then that I realized I'm not Mexican.
Yeah.
I am not. And it was like, and it was really shocking to me. But it was time that I embraced, you know, the fact that I really wasn't Mexican.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I was just a kind of a hybrid.
Yeah. I always used to answer the same. Not because I had such pride in my Mexican heritage, but because that's just where I was like, I'm Mexican. As a elementary student, I didn't understand the term Mexican American. No one had told me anything about that. And I was very cognizant of the fact that I was different. And so when anyone would ask me, what are you or where are you from? I would always just say I'm Mexican. Mm-hmm. And I continued to say that all into my adulthood, and people are like, "You're not Mexican. You weren't born in Mexico." I'm like, "Okay, but I feel like Mexican American is just so silly to say." Like, really the correct thing for me to say is just when people ask me where I'm from, I'm American. I was born here. But I'm not sure if we've talked about this here on the podcast, but it was really interesting to me growing up. I grew up with heavy Latino culture influence on my life because my grandmother was from Mexico. I grew up with my grandmother, my great grandmother around. My mother was born here. She was very, as they say, whitewashed. Mm-hmm. I grew up in a middle-class white neighborhood. My stepfather was white. And it wasn't until I think graduated from college did I actually understand that I did have all this Latino culture in me just by pure incidents of my grandmother being from Mexico and all of these traditions that she brought. Even though my grandmother was one of the first to like talk negative about the other Latinos that lived on the block, and to her everyone was illegal, and so that's interesting too. Like
an interesting dichotomy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's how I grew up, and so almost like that self-hatred type thing that sometimes people talk about. Mm-hmm. And so it wasn't until I was much older that I learned to appreciate that culture that I did have, and that it did in fact exist, that it was part of who I was.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And it's funny because my parents aren't Mexican, they're Guatemalan, so I'd always get like a little bit huffy when people would say, like, I was like, you're Mexican American or you're Mexican. I'm just like, no, I am neither of those things. and then they would say, so then what are you? And I'm just like, well, my parents are from Guatemala. But I've always kind of had that awareness of, I don't know what the fuck to label myself. And I would say, sometimes I would say American, and then people were just like, oh, so, but where are your parents from? And they're like, oh, they're Guatemalan. And I guess they themselves didn't want to say Guatemalan American. So they would be like, so you're Guatemalan. And I'm just like, but I've never been there. So why are you calling me Guatemalan when I've never even been there? And it's, and then my godparents, were Mexican and Salvadorian.
Oh, okay.
So I kind of grew up with that culture around me. So,
well, you got all the good food.
Let me tell you, to this day, I dream about my madrinas, pupusas.
Oh, like, I love pupusas.
No one, I swear to God, like, this person could be an award-winning, like, fucking, like, I don't know, quesadilla, like, number one in the world and, like, maker or whatever, but they would not be my madrinas. Because, simply because, I grew up with them. Yeah. They're so fucking delicious.
It's just like I'm sure all the Mexicans say that there's no beans like the grandma's beans.
Yeah.
With a little lard in them.
Oh, yep. Yeah.
Delicious.
The red box.
But, so, well, I grew up with Mexican and Salvadorian culture, and my own parents are Guatemalan, but and I was always hesitant to claim any of these because I wasn't Mexican.
Yeah.
I wasn't Salvadorian, and I'd never been to Guatemala, and I was American, but people kept telling me I wasn't American, mm-hmm. or at least I was some kind of hyphenated American.
Right.
So that feeling of just kind of in-betweenness never really left me until, I think... towards 11th, 12th grade.
Mm-hmm.
And that was because I did not give a fuck. At that point, like, I something had just clicked in my head, and there had been my academic decathlon teacher. He was just like, don't let people define you. Well, like, he's just like, only you can define yourself. And that had finally, like, clicked, and I was just all like, holy shit, he's right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so I just, like, it's just, well... It, now it's just, bruh, I'm American because I've been to Guatemala and I can now definitely say
also that,
I am not Guatemalan. I am not Guatemalan at all. There's that resonation of being raised by Guatemalan parents,
yeah,
and in that culture, but I know for a fact that I am not Guatemalan.
Yeah.
And I'm whatever Guatemalan American is. Which I don't think has really been defined.
Yeah.
And that just means Oscar Isaac. Bless. I'm literally doing prayer hands right now because Oscar Isaac is hella fine.
Is he short?
Alas, yes.
That's a... Okay.
He's not too short.
I don't know why us Latinos always... We got the, no, pun intended, we got the short end of a stick when it comes to height.
Yeah, very true, very true.
And look, I am the tallest person in my family.
Yeah.
At an amazing height of 5'7". That is, like, but that's already, the average height of the Hispanic woman is 5'2".
Oh my gosh, that's average?
That's the average.
I'm above
height.
Average.
Yeah. The average.
I'm below average. 4'11", guys.
My mom.
You're 4'11"?
I'm 4'11".
You're going to be like 4 feet when you get old.
I know. I'm going to, yeah. I mean, I just passed midget.
Uh huh.
But mm-hmm. when I get old, I'm going to be definitely a little person.
And the average height of the Hispanic man is 5'4".
Are you serious?
Yes. It's 5'4".
Oh
now,
my gosh.
Oscar Isaac is 5'9". He's literally 2 inches taller than me.
I can do that. I think my husband's 5'10".
5'10", yeah. And so, like, I know men who are 5'9", but they're usually not Latino. So I would, this is all to say I would do Oscar Isaac in a heartbeat. But yeah, that's the average height of the Hispanic man. So I will always be 3 to 4 inches taller than the average Hispanic man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, it's just like, my brother is 5'4".
Whenever I get whistles or whatever it is that they do to me on the street, yeah.
Like if I'm a fucking dog.
I feel like I just want to walk up to them and like pat them on the
Oh my god. Oh my god. That would immediately stop anything that they do. That just.
Oh my god. Challenge accepted. That would be awesome. I would love to be there. Love to be there and see that happen. That would be awesome.
But it is just like 5'7" isn't even that tall.
Yeah.
I've met women who were taller than me.
Yeah.
And definitely a lot more men. But it's just like, why? Although, I am kind of a bitch because I lord it over my other siblings. And but now, my littlest brother, Joel, he is about my height now.
Oh.
So he inherited whatever
gene
kicked in that was just like, you're going to be tall.
Yeah.
And he hasn't really fully hit puberty yet.
Ooh.
So when he finally does, I'm not going to be the tallest anymore, and I'm a little salty. but he's like, anytime like we talk about height, he looks at me, and I look at him, and we just have like a silent battle. he suddenly telling me, I'm going to be taller than you,
yeah.
And it's going to be fucking great. And I'm just going to be like, no, you're fucking not. You're going to tap out at 5'7". That's it.
I like that. My brother's way taller than I am. We have different dads. His dad was not a short Mexican.
Well, he was a gringo.
And so, he was a gringo, and he's 6 foot. And so, yeah, he passed me up a long time ago.
It happens to the best of us.
So we got a little bit sidetracked, but it all,
wraps up
nicely into the way that family and culture really play a big part in this book, mm-hmm. and I cannot recommend it enough. I teared up and cried multiple times during this book.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And I don't want to spoil anything for you guys, but there's a kind of a pattern in this book
yeah.
on the way mm-hmm. the stories are told
yeah.
and the way the chapters are named. It wasn't until chapter 4 that it kind of hit me.
Yeah, at mm-hmm. first I was super confused. I'm like, what the heck is happening? And mm-hmm. I think I was about the same around chapter 4. I was like, okay, there's a pattern here.
Yeah, and it's a very unique twist.
Yeah, absolutely.
And definitely, when I say that this book is magical realism, I mean it. It is magical realism in comic book form,
mm-hmm.
and
absolutely.
I am all fucking for it.
I loved it.
In comic book terms, that would be magical slice of life.
Yeah, magical slice of life. Yeah.
Yeah. No. This in and the way they close each chapter to kind of be like if you're reading the life of
yeah.
a person,
mm-hmm.
I thought that was really great.
I mean, the contrast of this book being about Bras's life, and the fact that he is a writer who writes obituaries for the local newspaper is just, there's really no other better way to mm-hmm. really contrast what's going on in this story of just like the grandness, I guess, of life, mm-hmm. if that makes sense.
Yeah. And it's just like, this book is so deep and so personal because
yes.
of the way that it's set up.
Yeah.
Is like, you get these snippets of not like of this grand tale of this one guy that goes on an epic journey. No, it's like you said, it's a slice of life.
It's the small things.
It's
yeah.
It's the small things. And I think that's more personal. Seeing like the small things that make up a person, what they're excited about, what they're happy about, what troubles them, what they're thinking,
their fears,
yeah. their loves, their losses,
mm-hmm.
their relationship with their parents,
their relationship
with
yeah.
their kids, with their loved one, with their best friend. I mean,
mm-hmm.
these little things, down to like the description about the smell of the dad's cigarette.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I just found it completely magical. Everything was in sync, and it wasn't
mm-hmm.
until chapter 38
yeah
mm-hmm. but it's called 38, and that one, when I finished reading that one, I said fuck my life.
Yeah.
I had to
yeah.
put it down because I was like, fuck my life.
Yeah.
Like, I just felt so much emotion. I was just like, I gotta put
which
this
one
down.
Was that one?
That was the visit to his best friend.
That one was
Ooh, that gave me
that
the
one.
Willies.
That one was probably my favorite one.
Well, I was
yeah.
gonna say we've started to kind of do a tradition of talking about what our favorite part of the book was, and I know
mm-hmm.
Jen, you had mentioned that was your favorite. So why
mm-hmm.
don't you start off about why that was your favorite?
It was my favorite mostly because his friend had made a choice.
Yeah,
and He had committed to that choice, and but when a postcard arrived from his friend, he was just like, I'm gonna go help my friend out. And it reminded me a bit of my relationship, except towards that end where I'm just like, oh damn. with my own best friend,
yeah.
and how I've gone through so much with her,
yeah.
and if she suddenly like dropped off the face of the planet,
mm-hmm.
I would I would never stop looking for her, mm-hmm. but I also know that I would kind of maybe move on, but that I would keep her in my thoughts. And if one day she was just like, I need help.
Right.
I would be like, bullshit, fuck.
Yeah.
Time to go.
Yeah.
Time to go see, like, what's up. And she would never stop being my best friend.
Yeah.
And that's what I really liked about that story, about these ties and these decisions that you make and what kind of like people mean to you.
Right.
And I really like that.
Yeah. Do you have your favorite picked out, Sarah?
Well, I like that one. It was the one with the best friend. That was really really freaking moving. Mm-hmm. But one of the things that I thought was really a challenge that I didn't think could be executed, that I felt like formidably like amazed by, was the chapter called 47.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. And that was when the main character of the book wasn't in any of the panels during that chapter. And I found that to be extraordinary. You mm-hmm. got the sense that he was constantly there, mm-hmm. especially mm-hmm. when his wife would say he's everywhere, in the smell of the cigarette,
mm-hmm.
and he leaves me little notes and messages on the answering machine and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And we get to get a full
I'm remembering that issue. Mm-hmm.
That full-on experience. Yes. The son is, what is he? He's like 10 or something.
Mm-hmm.
And the wife and him, they have this wonderful relationship. And that, mm-hmm. I thought, was the execution was really.
Definitely.
It's something that I don't think anybody, I've never seen it before.
Yeah. There were definitely tears in that issue for sure.
Yeah, especially towards the end.
When she kept listening to the voice message mm-hmm. over and over, it broke my heart.
Oh my God, guys. When my mom passed, she left a message on the answering machine. She said, Sarah, start dinner, make the rice. Anyway, so I kept it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then there was a power outage and I freaking cried because I could not retrieve the message.
Yeah.
And fuck, I haven't thought about that since I read the book.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, dude, all the feels. That's all I gotta say about this.
Yeah, and it also reminded me, like, I've seen like documentaries about 9/11.
Yes, I was just gonna say that.
And how people had called their loved ones
from
their
planes.
From their planes.
Yeah.
They left voice messages, or like before they got on the flight, they left a message.
Yeah.
And when the planes went down, the families kept those recordings. They kept them and they did not delete them.
Yeah.
And they recorded them in someplace else so they could hear their voices.
This is why I always get mad when Eddie doesn't answer the phone. What if I'm dying and this is my last call? And, you know, he tells me, well, then instead of the memory, I will have your voice recorded for all time.
I mean, we laugh now, but it makes a big difference.
Yeah.
And had I been technically savvy, I probably would have been able to save that message.
Yeah.
And it was something so simple as start dinner before I get home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Fuck. Anyway, that that was one of my the execution of that chapter was like, I can't even say magical. It was just so raw for me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that's my favorite one.
My favorite part of the book was the last issue.
Oh yeah.
When, because you see that he struggles throughout all of the book. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of quote-unquote issues that he has, and a lot of them stem from his relationship with his father.
Mm-hmm.
And when his son brings him that book and says, there's a letter in here for you.
Oh my god.
And even right now I'm starting to tear up.
Yeah.
And it's from his dad. And a lot of just, like, his angst in his life was because of the fact that he thought his dad, like, that he was disappointing his dad.
Right, mm-hmm. right.
And
that's the feeling I got in the first chapter.
Uh-huh.
And I was mm-hmm. like, oh, man, this is going to be dreadful. Mm-hmm. but it becomes very beautiful.
For a book to affect me so, like, all of us here, like, so, like,
I'm getting a little bit teary right now.
We're all wiping tears from our eyes.
And then he reads the note from his dad, and there's just, like, there's a sense of peace and resolution that you see, and the actual art that is drawn to portray that is just fucking amazing.
Yeah, it is. They're both so talented.
Yeah,
it's utterly amazing how what they were able to do, the dream-esque quality that they were able to add to this book, and it's in towards the later end and towards the when it says that they did sketches. One of the brothers comments that they weren't trying to make the places look real. They were trying to make them feel real.
Yeah.
And yeah. I believe that's so true, because sometimes, like, places in my memory and how I see them or and how I see them is so different than what they actually are.
Right.
Or whenever, like, probably the most iconic one is, like, or, like, the one that I can most give, like, an example of. Everyone has seen that postcard image of Los Angeles with the cars running by and, like, the streets, like, slowing down. They use it for news. They use it for movie cutscenes to, like, show the progress of time and stuff. In postcards, it's, like, an iconic, like, you see the L.A. city landscape.
Yeah.
And everything. But in my memories, well, and even now, because I passed where that photo was taken a lot of the times, and it's just become kind of like habit for me. But how I always see that area is gray. It's gray, and it's in the photos. It's all these lights, and it's like, and it's these are for professional photos,
right?
And they focus like on everything, and that would be what other people would see, but in my mind, that area is always gray, and I don't know why. It's probably how the building and how the place is almost always cast in shadow.
Oh yeah.
And even when it's sunny, it's just that area always just feels like gray to me, and that's what makes it real. So whenever I see a photo of that area, I'm just like, I know where that is. And to me, that's not how it looks like.
Yeah.
To me, that area is always gray. And it's not like a bad, like, oh, like, it's so boring. It's just, like, literally, like, the color tones, like, in my mind, even how right now I'm remembering it, it's just shades of gray. And it's just like, and nothing special has ever happened to me there.
Yeah.
I just pass it by all the fucking time.
Yeah.
Especially when I'm going to help my mom, because it's on her way to work.
Oh,
yeah. And so I just pass it all the time, and that area is just literally gray to me. And that is what makes that place real for me.
Right.
And that's what I got from this. Like, if I were to go to El Salvador or to Brazil and I saw this, like, I feel like I would see, this is what I would see.
Yeah.
Over there, not whatever, like, professional photos or tourist maps or anything like that.
Yeah.
Definitely. So, any other things that you want the listeners to know about this book that they should?
I mean, we've already shared our amazing thoughts about the book. Jen has mentioned that it was an Eisner Award winner in 2011. Not only did it win an Eisner, it won a Harvey Award for Best Single Issue. I'm not sure what issue it was, but any of the ones in there were highly deserved of that award. And also, it won an Eagle Award for Favorite New Comic Book in 2011. So it is an award-winning book, and I cannot recommend it enough. It comes highly recommended from, I think, all of us.
Definitely.
Absolutely.
So, ratings?
So, are we rated, girls?
Yes. I am ready to rate it 3 conchas. We rate our comic books here by pan dulce. Conchas are our pan dulce of choice. Our rating is 1 to 3. And I rate it 3 conchas and a cup of champurrado.
Same rating right here. 3 conchas and a cup of champurrado. And wherever that bakery was that he was, that he met his wife.
Exactly. Yeah.
Throw that in there too.
Well, I'm gonna say Super Saiyan. No, that's the wrong one. No, for me, Jen, I just want to thank you, man. I needed some vertigo in my life just right about now. So this is amazing to me, and I loved every bit of it. So I'm gonna go 3 conchas and the whole panaderia.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For me. Definitely love this book. I'm going to recommend this to everybody who wants to read something super awesome.
It's funny because a girl came into the shop on Sunday specifically asking for this book. And I just happened to have the copy sitting on the desk. And she's like, I don't see it. And I'm like, well, here it is. And so she took it. And she's like, well, I don't know how it came onto her radar, but she hadn't read it, and she's like, well, what did you think about it? And Jen and I just started gushing about it.
Oh, so my God.
She's like, yes, this is what I want. So she took it. So hopefully she enjoyed it.
Yeah. Excellent.
I can now hustle this book.
Yes. All right, guys. Well, that was amazing. Thank you for recommending that, Jen.
Yes, thank
you. You're welcome. I try.
Girls, what's on your radar?
Well, on my radar is, and I don't think I've mentioned this before, the Kirby, Jack Kirby's, like, 100th, what would have been his 100th birthday, is this year. And both DC and Marvel did kind of tributes to him, Marvel by reprinting, doing some Jack Kirby covers, as well as reprinting some of the key issues that he did, which were super legit. They all had the True Believers thing kind of it, and they reprinted First Appearance of Thor, Thor versus Hulk, Avengers number 1, like the first Tales to Astonish and stuff like that. Well, not the first one, but yeah. But or was it the first one? I'll have to look back. But they were really cool. What DC did absolutely blew Marvel out of the water, because
as it should be.
But
hey, I'm a Marvel fan here.
I love Marvel too. I would sell my soul for Miss Marvel. I think DC was more apt in their tributes towards him because they brought back a lot of his old titles of stuff that he did that was just super cool, because some of them had original stories and artwork that other artists had did emulating the Kirby style, which is a unique style in and of itself that is absolutely what you find in the Golden Silver Age stuff.
Kirby Crackle.
And they did the Commandi Challenge, where each issue was a different artist and a different short story, and they reprinted some of his unpublished works. Now, Jack Kirby wasn't exactly the most enthralling writer, but let's be real, neither was Stan Lee. He had great ideas. But what other people have done with them is absolutely amazing. All of this to wrap up to say, Mr. Miracle is back, one of the new gods of that Kirby created, and it is being written by Tom King, and it is amazing. Tom King has done Sheriff of Babylon, Vision, Omega Man.
Yes.
He did Grayson. I believe he's done something else, but that I just
he's writing Batman right now.
Oh yeah, and he's doing Batman.
Yeah.
How the fuck did I forget? and in all that he's done, he's absolutely killed it.
Yeah.
And Mr. Miracle is turning out to be, again, another fucking great hit. Only two issues are out right now. But Mr. Miracle is, let me pull up this up, sorry. Okay, so Mr. Miracle is Scott Free, and Scott Free is the greatest escape artist that ever lived. So great that he escaped Granny Goodness's gruesome orphanage and the dangers of apocalypse to travel across galaxies and set up a new life on Earth with his wife, the former female fury known as Big Barda. Using the stage alter ego of Mr. Miracle, he has made a career for himself showing off his acrobatic escape techniques. He even caught the attention of the Justice League, which counted him among its ranks. You might say Scott Free has everything, so why isn't it enough? Mr. Miracle has mastered every illusion, achieved every stunt, pulled off every trick except one. He has never escaped death. Is it even possible? Our hero is going to have to kill himself if he wants to find out.
Sounds cool.
What?
And it's
Do we have number one still?
We have the second printing of number one because the first printing sold out literally within the day.
Okay.
It was the day on the Wednesday it came out, it was no longer available on Diamond. And
wow.
It was, not only was it a great hit, but it was absolutely amazing. And it's just, with a name like Tom King has made himself very well known in his brief career as a comic book writer. So a lot of people were excited for that. And a lot of people were excited, a lot of the older fan base was excited because they grew up with New Gods and they read New Gods, and it was a Jack Kirby title that they were bringing back. And they had already kind of done something before, like the Green Lanterns. There was in New 52 era before the whole Rebirth thing started off, that won a lot of acclaim, that they did a Green Lantern New Gods crossover.
Oh, okay.
That was really good, apparently. I haven't read it. but I am willing to go back and do that. And Big Barda herself is a well-known and well-loved character that is a bit more niche, but once you get into comic books, you'll know about Big Barda.
Yeah.
Like, she's just really fucking cool. But a bit of warnings, the first issue, and I kind of already said it in the preview itself, there is a suicide thing going on, and I remember reading that a lot of people were just all like, you should have added like
a trigger warning
or something like that, and I kind of agree. I mean, it was a comic book as well. I'm just like, oh, it's a comic book, chill. But also at the same time, I was just like, oh, bad memories. But that's the only warning I have. Besides that, amazing writing, amazing artwork, and just already, like, it's only two issues in, and it's already so fucking great.
Oh, nice. Well, I'm going to have to go back and check it out.
Yeah.
Well, this is Kristen, and speaking of books that sold out on the first day of their release, my On My Radar book did the exact same thing. They were out of Diamond on the Wednesday release, which was 2 weeks ago, and my book is Aftershock Publishing Company's Dark Arc. It's written by Colin Bunn, and the artist is Juan Doe. Now, I'm not going to make an assumption that that's a Latinx creator. I have a question out to Aftershock to just confirm that that he is. But I'll let you guys know. It'll be awesome if he is. But Dark Arc is the story of what if, not only Noah had an arc, but there was another arc that is commanded by a sorcerer, Shrey, and he was commanded to build his own arc and save the unnatural creatures of the world.
What?
Including such as vampires, dragons, the Naga, the Manticore, and unicorns. So, this story is about that arc. It's the story you all know, but it's not Noah's story. It's Shrey's story, the sorcerer.
That's so fucking cool.
So the question here is, the wickedness of mankind has moved the creator to destroy the world by way of flood. But what will happen on a vessel crawling with monsters where insidious intrigue and horrific violence are the rule of law? So you know I love me some Colin Bunn. Mm-hmm. And he is fucking hitting it out of the park with all of these horror stories that he's writing. I mean, you know, I've mentioned I'm a huge Harrow County fan, and you all know that I pushed Rob Liefeld out of the way to get to Colin Bunn at San Diego Comic-Con a couple of years ago.
That is my favorite story.
And during our conversation, when I mentioned to him how much of a Harrow County fan I was, he told me and talked to me about how his passion, his heart, is in writing these horror stories. And it freaking shows. Like, he is just such a good writer. He has The Unsound out right now. Dark Out.
Oh,
Arc
the
is
Unsound.
Out. And there's another one that's an Aftershock. Is it Unholy Grail or Insidious? Or in Petulance. I can't remember.
Pestilence.
Is it Pestilence? There you go. Is that the Colin Bunn one? I can't remember. So. He has a third. He has another one out. But he is just hitting it out of the park with this. Mm-hmm. And it's the Halloween season, so definitely get yourself out to a comic book shop or Comixology and pick yourself up some Cullen Bunn Horror. And I think Unsound was on my radar a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah,
the one about the weird psych ward.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think it was it last time we recorded? I think so.
I don't remember.
Because we were like freaking out that it's at a asylum kind of old ward.
Yeah. You know? Oh, yeah. Yeah. So, Dark Arc by Aftershock and, it's just, it's really good. The first issue is really, really good.
Mm-hmm. He's been killing it with that.
We should definitely focus right now on something dark because of the Halloween season.
Yes. He's also writing Venomverse right now, too.
Oh, that's right. I think you talked about that one.
Oh, yeah. I did. That was on my radar.
Very
I'm just really
excited.
I feel like... Oh, The Damned. There it is. Oh. That's what the other one is, The Damned. But, yeah, I just feel like Cullen Bunn is my thing.
Your
like,
spirit animal?
Yeah, I love him so much.
That's awesome.
That's so cool.
Very dark. I like it.
Yay. So what's on your radar?
Well, on my radar is something that I think we've all been looking forward to. It's The Gifted.
Yes.
Yes.
It's an American television series created by Fox, for Fox by Matt Nix. It's based on the Marvel Comics X-Men.
Yeah.
I don't know if you guys know about the little...
Tell us about this X-Men.
Who are these X-Men?
who are these beings?
And it stars Stephen Moyer. I don't know if you guys are familiar with him. He's Bill Compton from True Blood.
From True Blood.
Yes, I love that guy.
I heard that name today and I was like, where do I know him from?
The True Blood guy's on Gifted? I had no idea. He's on a commercial today.
I know. And it starts today, guys, on Fox at 9 o'clock. So hopefully it's on my Hulu feed because I'm ready to watch that.
Yeah, nice.
So that's totally on my radar. It's gonna tie in a lot with I guess I don't know why they can't call it the X-Men, but they call it the Gifted. I don't know. I don't care as long as the story is good. So I'm very excited about that. It's gonna be a 10-issue run for the first season, and we'll see. It's gotten really positive reviews from the critics.
Good.
And social commentaries are being very positive about it as well.
As always with those X-Men.
So I'm very, very excited. Have you guys heard anything else from it? I mean, I know that it's basically a family. Stephen Moore is a dad, and they have two kids who have
the mutant gene.
So they have to actually go into hiding and stuff. It's going to be based on their struggles because of their children that have these special gifts.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So
and apparently the people who at Comic-Con there were big billboards all over the place saying something like protect your family, protect yourself, protect society, get yourself tested for the X gene.
Oh.
Are you a carrier of the X gene?
Oh, snaps. Oh, so yeah, basically they have to run from the government. So that's going to be really cool. They're going to join an underground community of mutants. So I can't wait. I'm ready to see all sorts of mutants.
I think what they're doing with a lot of the TV shows is that they're kind of leading into what would be the future for Logan. Because we know now Logan is out of continuity with the rest of the X-Men movies.
Yes.
But the X-Men movies are doing their own thing because I definitely don't know how Legion would fit into the X-Men
exactly.
movies.
Yeah.
And it seems kind of more of its own thing, but like how they've done everything and how they seem to be doing The Gifted is more like, okay, Logan's going to be the movie, the literally old man Logan of of the movieverse, where it's a standalone one, it's its own thing. Well, in comic books, it was its own thing.
Speaking of X-Men Old Man Logan, I saw something today on my Facebook feed they're doing a prequel Old Man Logan.
Oh, what?
Yeah. Let me look. I don't know if it was comic book or TV show or animated, but I saw that run across my feed today. But,
I wouldn't be surprised if it was animated or from the comic books, because if it was a TV show, it's just like, who are you going to get to play Wolverine?
That's true.
I don't think that'll work.
It looks like it's a comic book, and it's Old Man... okay, so I didn't read it very clear. It's Old Man Hawkeye prequel.
Oh, interesting.
Huh, I'm still interested in that.
Yeah. So it says, the series will be written... Look at this, you guys are getting a bonus chisme de la semana. it says the Marvel Comics is set to release an Old Man Hawkeye comic. The series will be written by Daily News alum Ethan Sachs and illustrated by Marco Checchetto, who's working on Star Wars Captain Phasma right now. It will take place 45 years in the future from the current timeline, but 5 years prior to the events of Old Man Logan. So Old Man Hawkeye is, on its own terms, an epic story. It says readers will gain insight into previously established characters, explore new corners of the wasteland, meet new characters, and discover exciting Easter eggs all throughout Clint's journey. So those of you who haven't read Old Man Logan, you know, you don't know that Logan and Hawkeye are kind of like a team-up. And Hawkeye's blind, right?
Yeah, he's blind now.
It's a blind Hawkeye that you... and honestly, it's awesome as fuck.
it is. It's great. I feel like... I kind of don't like the name because it's like... You got Old Man Logan and they called Wolverine by his name. They should have done it like Old Man Clint.
That would have been cooler.
Yeah. Or like Old Man Barton. One of the two.
Old Man Barton.
Old Man Barton. Cool. And that's what a lot of people call him.
Old Man Barton, I think, would have been catchier.
Yeah.
A catchier thing. Yeah, because it's not Old Man Wolverine.
Yeah, exactly. And it would be, like, you know, reserved for, like, the fans. Like, they know who it was.
Yeah.
Not everybody off the streets would know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they'd discover it. And I don't know. I think it would be cooler.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. But anyways, back to the... I think that the what they're doing is with the TV shows is that they're doing the kind of, like, this is what led up to Logan thing, or like the events that happened with Logan. And I think that would be really cool, and they have more leeway to go with the more out there storylines that the X-Men did.
Mm-hmm.
That would be like super cool.
Excellent.
For sure.
Mm-hmm.
So that was all of our...
That was all of our... On our radar.
We had some good stuff this week. Yay!
Yeah!
And now, what time is it, Kristen?
Now it's time for Juntos y Fuertes. Yay! So, right now we are, unfortunately, during a time where a lot of the states in America are suffering from, disaster, the aftermath of a disaster from Hurricane Harvey, Hurricane Irma, and just a lot of natural disaster stuff that's going on. And the most recent, what has been going on with both of those hurricanes in Puerto Rico. And today, I want to share a Juntos y Fuertes from an actual Puerto Rican comic book artist who is raising money for hurricane relief in Puerto Rico. His name is Miranda Rodriguez, and he is the creator of La Borinquena, which is a comic book about it's a Puerto Rican superhero. And I've actually seen this book around and was thinking that's definitely something we should do for the show. We should review that book. But when this came up on my timeline, I thought it was just amazing thing for him to do. It's going to be, if this is for East Coast folks, so I'm sorry if you are over on the West Coast or in the Midwest, but if you can make it out, it's at the Casita Maria Center for Arts and Education in South Bronx. and it's going to be Arte de la Borinqueña. It's gonna, the opening show is going to be October 4th, and they're gonna have a reception with DJ Smoke LES, and the show is gonna run through January 6th. Like I said, Miranda Rodriguez is the writer and creator of the Puerto Rican superhero comic La Borinqueña, and they're going to be exhibiting over 30 limited prints, and each are created by a different professional comic book artist and or animation artist. The prints will all be signed and numbered. The printing was also donated. What I was trying to say is the printing was donated by London-based gallery Art You Grew Up With International. So the pieces are $200 plus shipping, and all of the profits will go to Hurricane Irma relief effort.
That's wonderful. Yes. You know, when people go out of the way to create something in order to help their fellow man, I think that's commendable, and I think it's just magical. I think it's wonderful. You know, it speaks so much from our society that a lot of people, you know, they frown upon, or they're scared, or, you know, because of the unknown. But I think when people reach out to other people in need, I think it's great. It's a pleasant surprise.
Definitely. I think with a lot of these disasters that are happening, we're seeing it over and over again of just the normal everyday person who has the capability of lending some sort of help, just picking up and going and helping, like we saw in Texas and in Florida, just people driving into the places where the flooding had occurred to help people, mm-hmm. and to get them to safety.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And a really cool thing that I've seen happen, I follow a lot of comic book artists and writers on Twitter, and what a lot of them have been doing is that the proceeds that they make from their books and stuff like that, they're donating to the to this Hispanic Federation Fund that are giving it to Puerto Rico for hurricane relief. So people like Greg Pak, Molly Ostertag, and all these other creators who are just saying, if you pre-order this book or you buy the book, like, all the proceeds made will go to Puerto Rico relief. And you can find out who's doing this, and a lot of them post pictures to show that they have done this, and that they are donating this money that they've made to the Puerto Rico relief. So just put in Puerto Rico, the hashtag Puerto Rico relief, and you'll find out a lot of them and what they're doing. And
that's awesome.
And what they're basically what they're donating.
Right. Yeah.
Exactly.
Cool.
Much like Diego Luna and his friend Gael García Bernal, who also made up a fund too for relief of the Mexico
earthquake.
The earthquake.
A lot of, you know, some of the earthquake happened in Puebla, which is where my family's from. And a lot of the people we know, and the closest story, none of my family really suffered, but the closest story I heard was from my aunt's sister-in-law, and she had a half sister, and because everybody was running around trying to find their loved ones, there was like no help. So her dad went to go look for her daughter, and he had to dig for her. He found her. She had passed. Yeah. She had been crushed by debris. So there's a lot of stories out there like that. And, you know, if you can spare a few dollars, you know, it's a good feeling to help someone else in need. You know, someone else that had gone through something that we'll never understand. But it's good to know that, you know, they can...
Oh, we might.
Don't say that. Don't say that.
They keep saying that the big earthquake's going to hit California.
That's true. Yeah. That's true. But definitely something, just, you know, put that little under your hat, and maybe, you know, maybe not get that latte, or, you know, maybe, you know.
Yeah, that's $5.
Yeah, that's $5 right there. So, you know, just... It's good energy. Put it out there. Good vibes and stuff. You know, shit happens, but you know, it's good to be able to turn to your fellow man and for help. And
yeah, definitely. And I've already shared this link on the Comadres y Comics Facebook page. And so you can check it out. It's all the information is there if you're in the New York City area.
Excellent. That sounds good. Juntos y fuertes. All right, guys, that brings us to the end of episode 21, but we have some great news, Jen, if you will please.
So, in our previous episode, we got in some goodies from Sam Humphries that he signed for us to give away.
Shout out to Sam Humphries!
Shout out to Sam Humphries, you are forever in our cool guy list. Yes. But he was really cool, and he gave us a bunch of stuff to give away, and we said that if you liked and retweeted or shared or reblogged or whatever, that we would sign you up to win these items. And I have put every name in a random generator list. And the winner is... Nesty!
Yay!
Nesty! I love your name!
I love Nesty!
I do... I love it. All right, and Nesty, she follows us on Twitter.
Yay!
She says, I'm just a nerd and sports fan that watches too much TV. Tim Drake is my favorite Robin. Good choice in Robin. Good choice in Robin.
That's awesome.
I love Dick.
Congratulations to you, and thank you for listening.
Thank you for listening.
And participating in our little giveaway.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. So these things do happen, dude. You guys can win. Just, you know, participate.
And I will send Nesty a message on, what is this? Twitter.
Uh-huh.
Yes. On Twitter, and or if you listen to the episode and I somehow forget to communicate, hit us up. On any of our websites, on Twitter, on Facebook, on Instagram, where we all got this, all the names. So we will send those out to you.
Yes.
Excellent. Mm-hmm.
And don't forget to follow us on Instagram at Comadres y Comics.
And on Twitter at Comic Comadres.
And don't forget to interact with us on Facebook. You could also hit us up on our Gmail, comadresycomics@gmail.com. Mm-hmm. And also rate and review our podcast on iTunes win a prize. Trust me, it's a cool prize. So if you rate and review us, you're in. So please, just take a few moments. It will take like 5 minutes at most if you're like, thinking about what to write, but hopefully it's something nice. And if it's something negative, you could still win because you reviewed us. So it doesn't matter. So thanks, guys, for listening. We have one more thing. I'm so sorry to interrupt, but yes, we will be at the comic.
Oh yes,
we're going to be at the Latino Comics Expo in Long Beach on November 11th. So please do
Isn't
come
it
by.
A two-day thing?
Yeah, it's a two. It's a Saturday and Sunday event. So come on down, say hi to us, meet us, take some of our swag.
We will have swag.
And take pictures with us, and, you know, it'll be great.
Recommend books.
Yes, recommend books.
Give us beer. We'll be there.
Yeah. Mentanos la madre. It doesn't matter. We love it anyway. So thanks for that, guys. So thanks for listening. We have been your hosts. I'm Sarah.
I'm Kristen.
And I'm Jen.
Thanks for listening, guys.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.